You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Monday, so it's time for Shapiro World with David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities in Johannesburg. David, there's so much going on at the moment. I mean, later on we'll talk a little bit about sport, but politics. Cyril Ramaphosa's new cabinet seemed to be initially quite well received by the market. You've got Marine Le Pen doing very well for the far right, can you believe it, in France. You've got the UK election coming up on Thursday. And I don't know about you. Oh, and of course, we've had the debate between Donald Trump and Joe Biden, which was, quite frankly, cringeworthy watching for both of them. But it seems to me, whenever I see politicians, this is the one thing I say first of all. It's like you when you read the results of a company and is 120 pages, the first thing you do is go to the summary and the outlook. Yes. And what I do is when I look at a politician, I say, if he or she were a G7 meeting, how would they look? Would they be able to comport themselves admirably on behalf of the country? And I must admit, most of the people that I see, I don't see them sort of dominating the stage and saying, rah, 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 NATO this and NATO that. There aren't any of these leaders that, maybe I'm just indulging myself in a historic fantasy, but do you see these powerful people that we used to say, yes, I'll vote for him or her? Not anymore, David.
No, you know what? There aren't any world statesmen or stateswomen. I don't know what you call them, statespeople. Yes. There are no leading world politicians. There's nobody there that you trust has got a complete understanding of what's happening in the world and where the country fits in the world and where G7 fits in the world. You know, it just seems to be they seem to have kind of squeezed their way in because of anger politics or whatever has got them there. But, you know, you're waiting for someone to get up and really be able to command the stage, as you said, knowing what's happening in the world, giving you strong views on whether it's Russia, whether it's Ukraine, whether it's Israel, whether it's the Palestinians, whether it's China. You know, you've got no one there that you can really trust their views. And I think that's what you're getting at. You know, maybe there was an Angela Merkel who was a very commanding figure in her own way.
Yes.
Had good knowledge. There might have been other politicians in the past. I'm trying to think of in the UK, you know, who might have been in that position.
You might not like her, but Margaret Thatcher was particularly good. Her and the relationship with the most powerful country in the world and the most powerful man in that country, Ronald Reagan. You may not like her politics if you're a coal miner or something, but goodness me, you wouldn't mess with that woman.
Yeah, no. And I think you're looking for. I was listening to an interview with Seinfeld, the comedian.
Oh, yes.
And he was asked a question. He said, you know, I've always wanted to be a real man. He said, a real man. Now, what that means is, and I think he was unapologetic. He wants, you know, what he was talking about and the way I interpreted it was he wants – he likes those strong men. You know, can you imagine who's going to lead the troops onto Omaha Beach, you know, or somebody like that, you know, some strong John Wayne, Burt Lancaster character. you know what I'm getting at?
I do.
And I think in politics, you want somebody whose opinions you will value. You know, somebody in a powerful political position whose views – you feel, you know, will help shape the world, because at the moment it's a mess. And when I looked, and I know you're going to come to it, when I listened to extracts of the debates and read the outcome of Biden versus Trump, I just shook my head. But I want to tell you something.
Please.
You know what defined it for me? My granddaughter is 17 going on 18. She turns 18 on the 6th of October. So she will vote in November. She's qualified to vote.
Mm-hmm.
She watched the debate. Well, she's a school kid. She's going to be a senior at a high school. And she said, I can't vote for Biden.
No,
I can't vote for that man. She's certainly not going to vote for Trump. Not her whole leanings and views. But she said, I can't vote for him. And I think it kind of sums up, he has a first-time voter who's looking absolutely astonished at what's available. So I think, you know, for me, it made a very strong statement of where we are, you know, and of how difficult it must be for young people coming into the world, you know, on either side. I mean, if you're not going to vote for Biden, well, Trump, but that you can't bring yourself to do simply because of what he stands for. Yeah.
First time voters, you see, and it's the same in the United Kingdom. People haven't registered to be able to vote because they just say, I'm not inspired. Yeah. I look at Rishi Sunak, and he's an intelligent man who's made a huge success of his life at one of the world's most prominent investment banks. But he looks like that. He looks like a banker, a skinny little banker, very good at doing what he does, and that's skinny little banking. And you look at Keir Starmer, who's got a beautiful wife and everything, but he's quite sort of short and stocky. He looks like a pub bouncer. It's like me going down the Dog and Duck or something, and then saying, "All right, mate, let's have a look." And he frisks you or something. He looks like a bouncer. I can't see him standing next to Emmanuel Macron or President Xi or anybody and really commanding a presence, as I've said. But we're ranting. Well, I'm ranting now, David.
No, I know, but it's important. Thing, I mean, politics has defined markets. I mean, you know, whether it's been in France, whether in the UK, whether it's in America, you know, these are important kind of developments that are going to shape the world, because they are, whoever wins is going to be part of the G7, you know, whom we believe represents our values, you know, kind of Western world. You say, okay, what does that mean? I don't know.
Trump certainly commanded the stage the other night. Because he said all his lies, and there were 31. He was fact-checked by CNN about 10 minutes after it all finished. There was some bloke furiously going through, and he says there were 31 lies in 90 minutes from Trump. And the one that really got me was, he says, well, you know, NATO, he says, there's been no one else in history that has sorted out NATO quicker than I have. And I've been personally responsible for Europe and other NATO members paying hundreds of billions during my tenure as US president. Hundreds of billions, he said. And he said the Secretary General of NATO, he didn't even know who that is. He doesn't even know what NATO stands for, I'm sure. He said, that person said, we're so good to have you as the US president. The lies. And people, if you say something enough times, David, if I said to you, by the way, I've got a degree in geography, and by the way, the world is flat. And you keep on saying the world is flat. Eventually, someone in Idaho will believe you and say, look, Mr. Trump says the world is flat. And when I look out at the cornfields of Iowa, of course it's flat. And people will believe that crap. Excuse my language. It's astonishing.
It is. I mean, the problem is that nobody is in a position to actually challenge him and say, you know, and certainly Biden wasn't, to say, you know, that's not true, because he just hasn't got the knowledge, or he hasn't been not educated, but he hasn't been primed to you know, respond to these. They should know what he was going to say and say, look, that's not true. You know, that's, and even the mediators or the, you know, whoever is in charge of the debate, the moderator should be able to also kind of come up and say, hold on a sec, can you back that up, or something like that. They don't do that. You know, it's just, yeah, the other questions we're going to ask, that's it.
That's very true. So yes, there's no one challenging him.
No one ever goes, all that happens is we write about it, but whatever it is.
Yeah, and I have to thank you very much for pointing out an article in my favourite newspaper in the United Kingdom, The Guardian, from Tisdall, I think it is, the foreign affairs editor. I thought that I disliked Trump. I mean, I know that I do dislike Trump. I make no bones about it. He's an abomination of a human being. He's a derivative of a human being. He's not human, in my opinion. But the article that you pointed out to me, which was, I think, a day after the debate was over, I've never heard anything so scathing in all my life, and beautifully written. And okay, it's slightly biased, very biased, but gosh, you can't give that to someone in Illinois or in Mississippi or something. They wouldn't understand it. Sorry to offend you down there. I'm sure you're fine people, but it was a brilliant article, wasn't it?
Yeah. And I think that, you know, I like that one. And the other one was from, about the world, Tom Friedman,
yes.
Who also, sadly, being a friend of Biden's, and said he's been a friend of his, and he used the word friend, you know, for so long, for many, many years, and just said he was in Lisbon watching it, and he said on his own, and was just with sadness that he watched the debate. What's happened is that the family have said he must continue, and Biden's family, and so we'll bumble along.
Yeah.
I think the big fears is even if he manages to get through this for whatever reason, he's still got another 4 years. And if the signs are starting to appear, you can imagine what's going to happen in 4 years' time. So I just remember Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Yes.
The judge. Sorry, yeah, the Supreme Court.
The Jewish
judge.
Lady, yeah.
She, a magnificent lady with a very proud history. Highly revered. And it was time for her to step off during Obama's reign, you know, during Obama's period. And instead she stayed on, died while Trump was there, and he replaced her with a, you know, Republican judge as well. And it, you know, people criticized her for just hanging on that little bit extra. She did not want to give up as well. And I always use that as an example. And, of course, it altered the bias quite dramatically from like 5-4 or whatever it is in the Supreme Court to, you know, to 6-3.
Mm.
So it could have been different. So anyway, that's I don't know how we're going to get through the next few years, Lindsay.
It's going to be very, very scary indeed. Let's come back to South Africa now. The rand went below 18 against the US dollar after the announcement that was made over the weekend. What's happening there? I mean, you probably looked at the cabinet. I haven't. I'm sorry. I've been very slack. But I'm distanced from South African politics at the moment. Get on with it, I say, and stop saying, oh, look what we've done after 30 years. Now we're getting it right. And I hope that is the case. But what has the cabinet said to you as an investor?
Well, at least it's a move in the right direction. The fact that they're going to be around the table, I think, is very important. There's 6 deputy ministers and 6 ministers. It doesn't matter because you know from a cabinet's a cabinet, and it's a board. You know, so what it does say is that they've got 6 members of the board. It does mean that those sitting around the table are going to have to listen to their opinions, and it means you're going to get different opinions. It's going to be very testing when it comes to foreign affairs because, as you know, South Africa points to, I don't know whether it's the right or the left, I don't know where you term Russia today.
Well, it turns to Russia, I think is what we're saying, because of its the legacy of Russia supporting it during the apartheid years, which is fair enough. But you've got to be flexible. So I think that the new people outside of the ANC are going to say, no, wait a second, when they do sit around the table.
That's it.
And that's good. A lively debate and discussion instead of just this consensus view. Everyone puts their hand up and says, yes, we agree with you. That's what's quite exciting, I think.
Yeah, I think so. They're not going to be dominated by the president. I think there is going to be a lot of discussion. Whether that leads to problems and causes a breakup of this, I don't know. You know, we're going to have to see as time goes by. Yeah. But there are important posts for the Democratic Party. You know, there are some important posts. And the Deputy Minister of Finance, Agriculture, they're there, Home Affairs and Education. So there are various important departments. The problem is now, and if you look at the rand, it's back at 18.17 now. One thought that it would have improved. I think that's against the EFF are now saying they're coming out to, first of all, they wanted to join the cabinet. Now they wanted to join the government of national unity. Now I think the latest news is that they're going to protest against the new cabinet, you know, so they want to make their voices heard. Of course, they're going to use racist dogma and whatever it is, arguments and so on. So here we go. You know, instead of moving forward, we're going to have to face the EFF, which We'll probably handle it. Depends on whether it gets nasty or not, Lindsay. You know, whether sometimes when people protest, you know, they can, in South Africa, they turn over dustbins and burn tires and burn down buildings and who knows. Mm. So I think there's still a lot of risks around this. Not everybody's going to be happy with this, but, you know, from our point of view, business point of view, at least it's the first positive step in 30 years, you know, that at least we're going to have people there who are going to represent our views of having to, you know, as they say, they want to rebuild South Africa. So it's the first step rather than break it down.
It's very good. As I said, a step in the right direction. I did say that exactly what you've just brought up. I said it to a well-known value fund manager. I'll say his name, John Bickard, a really, really good check, a chap, intelligent fellow and everything. And he was waxing lyrical about this. He said, I knew this was going to happen. There were too many doomsayers and naysayers, and I've been proved right. And he was proved right. But I said, is there any chance that something happens? In other words, all this lovey-dovey sitting around the table and suddenly the government of national unity, is there any chance that the people that haven't been included might kick up a bit of a fuss? And from what you've just said, in a small way, that might be happening, whether it be MK, whether it be EFF, I don't know. But there's the potential for that to happen, and clearly it is.
Yeah, it's going to happen. It depends whether it gets ugly or not. You know, you don't mind opposition politics. You don't mind people arguing against what is decided, but if it gets ugly and starts to get too deeply political and, going back to comradeness and going back to the kind of protests that we had during the 70s and 80s, and it becomes ugly, then, I'm afraid, then it's not going to help us anyway. So we wait, you know, we're going to wait and see. I still think the Lindsay, which I know that John's waxing lyrical and he's carrying on about it, carrying on about South Africa. But at the end of the day, we don't wave a magic wand and suddenly things start to, you know, flowers begin to grow like a fairy godmother or something, you know, who taps something and pop, out pops flowers. It doesn't work that way. There's a huge amount of work to be done here. We're still an economy with high unemployment. We still got to root out the corruption. There's no growth in this economy at the moment. There's no money to be made, you know. In fact, there was an article that came out, not an article, there was a figure that I only picked up in the this morning in Business Day, which was highlighted, that fixed investment in South Africa in 2023 was down 43%. In other words, there was no fixed investment. Mm-hmm. You know, if you don't put down roads, if you don't fix buildings, if you don't build the economy, if there's no infrastructure, then you do not have the foundation on which to grow an economy. So I think there are lots of issues, and those will continually come out in the results. Sentiment might improve, but you know, I like to look at the raw results, you know, of what's happening, and that will take a few months to work its way through, you know, for us to make the decision about whether things are great or not.
Yes, and also what you have to look at as well, and you probably do, is look at the foreign inflows and outflows. Everyone's concentrated for many years now, and quite rightly so, about the outflows of foreign investment. But maybe there's inflows now. Maybe that's reflected in the bond market and the rand, tentatively at first, becoming off a low base. But maybe people are saying, let's give South Africa a chance. But they can soon turn tail and run for the hills, can't they, if things don't work out?
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. So I think you always got those the actual level of money put aside for emerging markets relative to the global capital, you know, is a very small amount. So yes, when it does come in here, it has got the ability to kind of move markets and that. You know, our volumes remain incredibly low. A huge amount of our economy is actually offshore, much more than we actually think. And I say that because going through results of companies like Argent, which is a tiny little business, tiny, and I go through some things like, you know, Invicta and all other companies, Vukili, which is a property company, most of their money comes from offshore. So we don't always capture what is, you know, what is offshore and what is actually local. And so, you know, it'll take time for that to swing around. A lot of the African investments are still under pressure. So there's a lot. But when money does flow in here, it tends to go into a few retailers and banks, which are not large in the scheme of things. And it doesn't really have a big impact on our indices. And remember, you know, it's still Anglos and Billitons and Naspers and Process and those big ones that dominate, Richemont and so on. The yes. banks do add a little bit, you know, but by and large, it's those large companies that decide where the index goes. And a lot of the institutions here are index trackers. Mm. I come back to, if you want to make money out of South Africa, you've got to be very brave and start selecting companies that aren't, you know, are small, medium cap companies that you've got to move away from the index and pick up those kind of things. But nobody plays safe. You know, everybody plays safe here. So no one's going to do that. You know, there are very few fund managers. I think John Bickard is one. You know, he's not scared to
sticks his neck out, doesn't he?
I'm going to take a big stake in Hulamin or whatever else he does, or Nedbank. You know, and he's done well in Nedbank. Yeah.
Isn't Absa? Anyway, he stuck his neck out. Let him enjoy his day in the sun. But as you quite rightly said, when I mentioned that I'd spoken to him, you said, "Have a look at Nvidia, and does a South African domestic stock have any can stand up to Nvidia and say, see what we're doing here?" And on that note, it's gone a bit quiet on that front, hasn't it? And David, I woke up this morning and I looked at the number on my screen here. The number was the month number 7. Half the year's gone. We have today started the second half of the year. And as you get older, you and I, which we are, and everyone else is as well, just seems as though it's flown by. And it's been an interesting 6 months, hasn't it?
Yeah, Lindsay, you know what? It's been quite interesting 6 months, because it's made up, when I say two halves, let me take a step backwards. Go have a look at the Dow.
Yeah.
You know, the Dow for many, many years, and even to this day, people still quote the Dow, which is made up of 30, it's an industrial average, which I'm not quite sure. I'm not going to try and explain how it works here, but it's not a weighted index. It's an average of the prices that are there.
Yeah.
So the higher the price, the more kind of weight there is. But anyway, I'm not going to go into that. But it's always made up of 30 stocks, very selectively chosen. And the Dow was up 3.8%, I think, for the first 6 months.
Mm.
Okay, that's not far out of the FTSE, which was up 4.7%. This is all in dollars, I'm quoting you. The JSE was up 3.9%, and the Euro stocks 5%. So they're very much of a
JSE likeness. In rand terms or in dollar terms?
Yeah, but that's the Dow. Mm. When you go to the Nasdaq, that was up 18%. Okay, so it gives you an idea of the influence. That's where all the tech stocks are. So the S&P was up 14.5%. So what happens is that when you actually go through the market and start to break up performances, it's all about tech. Mm. You know, that's where all the gains are. Take that away there, and you've got a lot of poor, bad, you know, negative performers. And I'm talking like a Nike was down like, I don't know, 20% plus. I can't remember. CVS Health down 25%. Walgreens down 53%. You know, these are standard. Starbucks down 19%. So it wasn't all ups, Boeing down 30%. So there were a lot of negative performances of companies that we kind of revered or so on. But if you go to Nvidia, as you said, 150%, Alphabet 30%, you know, this is where the gains have been made. And the big question is, do we stay there? You know, is this is AI real?
Quite a few people are sort of questioning it now, not just the valuations of the stocks, but also the application of artificial intelligence. I mean, it's a great thing. It's one, what has it been, 2 years now? So has it been 2 years or 1 year since ChatGPT came out and everyone said, goodness me, this AI thing is actually real? But the point is now, the continued application of it in a responsible way, and whether the regulators will come in and say, hold on a second. Whether they can or not, I don't know, but try and regulate it. How do you regulate AI? I'm not sure that you can efficiently.
No, I don't ask me when it gets. That's where we need Viv.
Yeah, we need Viv on Thursday.
Viv's got a great understanding of technicalities.
But he's biased. But
I'm actually trying to write an article, and it's not without being, I don't want to be opinionated or dogmatic. I'm merely discussing, and I think that, you know, one, you can't expect AI to suddenly give you results. You know, it can't just suddenly. It takes time for technology to work, for us to use it. You know, I was talking in a meeting with chaps who work for me and our little team, and you can't believe how we use it. One of the chaps is saying, you know what I do. I take the whole transcript. I go on to, well, FactSet, which is our equivalent to Bloomberg's and, you know, FactSet. And you take the full transcript of a, of a management meeting of a CEO after results. He says it and cuts and pastes it into, ChatGPT and says, okay, just summarize the following things. What did they say about this? What did they say about that? And in almost instantaneously, you get a summary of what management said. Now, you don't realize how much time that's saving you, you know, of having to go through the whole transcript and kind of points and put them around and so on. And it's these things that you can't really identify or formulate. And it's, you know, but it's happening. You've cut down a lot of expense. You know, I do that all the time. If there's something that's troubling me, I'll ask a question and say, just give me some background to this problem or what it is. You know, tell me about the French parties or something. And it gives you decent summary. So even in the small way that we use it, it's been incredibly helpful. But it will take a long time to get the full benefit, you know, from pharmaceutical companies, from law firms, from accounting firms, from IT firms who use it to code. But the thing is that, do you give up the ride now? You know, do you say, I'm too much of a skeptic? I don't think so. And I follow Jensen Wang, I don't know how to pronounce his name, but I follow him closely. And, you know, if he tells me something like the ASML CEO, or, you know, when they tell you this is how many machines we're selling, and, Wang will tell you how many chips we're producing, what's coming. I say, okay, I'm going to go for the ride. No, I don't have to get out yet. I don't think the story's over. So that's my take on it. Am I right or wrong? I don't know. You know, there's no right.
There's no reason to get out, David. That's the whole point. I mean, you can suddenly, you'll recognize the cracks like people did in the NASDAQ in March 2000, I think it was. And you've got a chance. You might lose the first 3 or 4%, but you'll know when suddenly people are saying, hang on a moment. This is not quite the ticket. Right. Yeah. So anyway, you stay with it, David. You've done very well out of it. So anyway, it's a quiet time of year. Look at the markets, and they're pushed around a little bit. The euro's pushed around by the politics and the British pound, etc. And the US markets just don't really care about either Biden or Trump. Interesting to see if Trump does cement his position as the front runner for the presidency, whether the S&P will say, "Wow, great, thanks very much. We're going to have cheap money for big companies," because that suits Trump's diminishing portfolio. But it's an interesting time, but it's very, very quiet. It's July the 1st, and Northern Hemisphere is going on holiday, and you've got Wimbledon starting today, which is sometimes good fun. You've got the European Football Championships, Euros, and all sorts of Tour de France going on. There's so much going on. It's holiday time. Speaking of football, David, England, if you read a book in 10 years' time, you say, well, England got to the semi-finals or something, whatever they're going to get to. And it doesn't tell the full story because it's been a shambolic, disgraceful representation of manifestation, rather, of football. It has been bloody awful. Yeah. Tonight, I'm looking forward to France against Belgium at 6 o'clock because you've got Mbappe and De Bruyne on the same pitch and Dembele and so many other people. It's going to be an exuberance that you don't see with other teams like England, for example.
I've been impressed with Switzerland.
Yes.
I mean, this is a non-nation, but they played really beautiful fast football. They completely swamped Italy. Yeah. I mean, Italy didn't know which pitch they were playing on. And then you've got once more where you've got the Eastern European nations who are playing very, very good football. You know, even I didn't like Slovenia were lucky, but in the first half they completely outmaneuvered England. You know, they deserved that goal, and I'm glad that England came through because it gives us another moaning and groaning chance to moan and groan. But I mean, I think that overall there's been some really classy stuff. I like what we've seen. They've been exciting games. There's always been a chance. So
yes, me too.
Right, we'll see what happens in the next 2 weeks. That's why, who wants to work in July? You know, I mean, Tour de France, I watched the cricket, you know, it was staggering game. It's staggering to watch, exciting. And, we got rugby coming here, Ireland, South Africa. Then we start with the All Blacks all coming. So there's lots and lots coming ahead.
Yes, exactly. Lots of very good excuses not to do any work. What's that?
Lindsay, I haven't been. I don't know if there are any transfers taking place.
Oh, excuse me. The big news: Ipswich Town sign Omari Hutchinson. He was on loan from Chelsea to Ipswich last season, and he did so well. He scored something like 15 goals, and there was 10 assists. And this is a 19-year-old when Ipswich got him, and he used to be an Arsenal Academy member. Or pupil, whatever they call him. And then Chelsea snapped him up for nothing. He just moved to Chelsea. Yeah. And then Chelsea loaned him on to Ipswich. And there was no money transfer between Arsenal and Chelsea. Ipswich groomed him under the manager, Kieran McKenna, and the coaching staff. And suddenly Chelsea, from getting him for nothing and doing nothing with him, but Ipswich did, they suddenly get 22 million quid, which for Ipswich is an awful lot of money. Well done, Chelsea. Yeah, well done, Todd Bowley. I mean, that's the nature of football now. It's incredible what goes on there. The money and you know what it is as well, David? It's like a broker. The agents and the advisors behind the scenes scooping off the top, making a fortune.
I know. When you look at the old pundits that are there, they wish they could have been in this age, you know. With the John Barnes and all those others who are commentating, you know, I don't think they ever got anywhere close to this kind of money.
No, they didn't. Anyway, David, thank you very much. I must dash. Thank you very much for your insight, most of which was a political, but entirely appropriate with the markets very quiet. David Shapiro is from Sasfin Securities in Johannesburg, and that was Shapiro World. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.